Shut up and sit down.
Welcome to the Rethinking Football Podcast, where we discuss player development with players, world-renowned scouts, professional football academy directors, coaches, and others. We will use Spain's model and compare it to other national governing bodies in other countries. At the end of each podcast, we will update our theory of change to improve player development worldwide using indicators, best practices, and our own research, along with the opinions and expertise of our guests. Soccer Hall of Fame inductee Hugo Perez is a legend and a true agent of change. Perez was part of the generation that influenced tens of thousands of football lovers in the U.S. During his 14-year career as a professional footballer, Perez earned 73 national caps, including the Olympic squad. He was a member of the 1994 U.S. World Cup team and was a starter in the unforgettable Round of 16 match against Brazil. As a coach, Perez has been credited as the architect of the most talented U.S. youth national team in history. The graduates from his U.S. U15 boys national squads between 2012 and 2014 represent some of the players that can potentially shape the future of the USMNT, including Christian Pulisic, Andrew Carlton, Josh Perez, Tyler Adams, Lucas Del Rosario, and Jose Carranza. He also brought Jonathan Gonzalez to the U.S. national team program. Perez talks about solutions that can improve talent scouting, player development, and coaching education.
Welcome to Rethinking Football. This is part three of our three-part series with Hugo Perez. I'm your host, Dawn Brown. The United States men's national team experienced its worst moment in its recent history in 2017. Despite a desperate change in management, the team had a poor FIFA World Cup qualifying campaign, which ended in its elimination, something that had not happened in 32 years. This campaign also brought out the best in some and the worst in others. For example, some of the most iconic senior players and coaches of the men's and women's programs made xenophobic comments about players with dual citizenship that were being considered for the national squad. But not everything was bad news. Dual citizenship holder, 18-year-old Christian Pulisic, was the leading scorer for the World Cup qualifier campaign, shifting fans' interest and hopes to the next generation of players, those born in 1997 and younger. The next generation of U.S. players can potentially become the most successful one ever. For example, there are more young players competing in Mexico and debuting in Liga MX. There are more U.S.-born players currently competing at the academy and senior levels in Spain, Germany, England, Italy, Poland, Denmark, and other countries in Europe. With the new change in leadership, U.S. soccer's 32nd president, Carlos Cordero, and the rest of the federation's leadership have one of the most challenging mandates in recent times to turn the USMNT program around for the better. While the pool of talent is better and larger than it has ever been for future national teams, the makeup of the team will depend greatly on what direction the new technical director and national coaches will want to take. Will we rely on better skilled technical players? Will we continue to stick to more physical and less talented players while the rest of the world moves forward? Do we take advantage of our players with international experience like the rest of the world? Or do we follow a more protectionist approach and rely on our domestically produced talent? Only the future will reveal what is to come. In this episode of Rethinking Football, we will talk to Hugo Perez about the ways we can improve our USMNT program and take advantage of the next generation of players. Let's transition and talk a little bit about your experience and your perspective as a national coach. A lot of people don't know how the scouting process works. Can you talk about what the process is in the U.S. to identify players for the national team?
Well, I can only tell you about my experience. Obviously, I haven't been working with U.S. soccer for, you know, I left there 3 years ago. But when I was there, we had the personnel that we had working with us. Obviously, we spoke to them about what type of players we were looking for. we would pick, you know, we would scout and have people scout academy games, and we describe to the academy personnel, also their coaches, and we ask them and we try to speak to them and give them an idea what type of players we were looking for and why. The scouts also were given that direction to pick certain type of players that we felt were going to be helpful for implementing the philosophy and style of play that we wanted to proceed with at our youth national teams.
Hugo, when we first spoke, you mentioned that national coaches had some autonomy when it came to identifying players. Can you tell us what initiatives you implemented to access bigger player pools?
I personally did training centers every month in different regions to be able to attract the best players within clubs or within academies. But I always spoke to the coaches of those clubs and told them exactly what type of player I was looking for, because I didn't want them to say just any player that they thought was good. I specifically gave them the prototype of players that we were looking for, so that way when they came to our training centers, we would look at them and we would see how good they were. And also, I created a program where every month we had a training center for identifying players, but our training centers wasn't really only about identifying players. It was about teaching them and preparing them so that way they could be ready when they were called to national team camps.
Where did you implement this initiative?
I implemented that in our region, mostly here in Northern California, in Southern California a little bit. We don't have enough scouts in the U.S., to be honest with you, to be able to look at so many clubs. It's impossible. But the way I did it was I picked the region, and then from that region I called all the clubs or sometimes the league, and I said, look, send me this type of players. I want to look at them because we're working with U.S. soccer. And even though we don't have a lot of scouts, I said, I think if we can get between 400, 500 kids sometimes for a weekend to look at them, at least we could find somebody that we were not going to be able to see them because of a lack of scouting that we didn't have, and obviously because the country is so big. But we were able to do that, and we were very successful with that.
It sounds like a great idea. I know other national governing bodies do similar initiatives. Is this something that U.S. soccer has scaled? And what I mean is, do other national coaches do this regionally as part of their job with U.S. soccer?
I don't think it's being done as much as when I was there. I think they should consider doing that again, because that helps a lot. Mexico does it, I think, three or four times out of the year. They go to different places and they speak to all the youth clubs or the youth Hispanic leagues, and they invite them to a weekend where they can see between 400, 500, sometimes 800 players. And that's how sometimes they identify players for the national team programs.
Right. You mentioned that you don't think that there are enough scouts in the U.S. Do we have any U.S. scouts that are looking beyond the U.S., looking overseas for players?
Yeah, I think they do. I think I'm not 100%, but I think they do.
And for youth, right?
Yes, for youth. Not many, but they do. But again, I think it all comes down also when you talk about scouts, for example. I know in Europe there's a lot of scouts from every professional club. But one thing that when you speak to those scouts or when you speak to different federations in Europe is that what they do well is that they have a good relationship. Their federation and their professional clubs have a good relationship with the youth clubs. What that means is that it makes it easier when they have that, because now all those clubs become scouts. You see? All those clubs become scouts. All those coaches in those youth clubs become scouts for them, whether it's a federation or whether it's the professional club. because now they're working so close to each other that even though they're not being hired completely by the clubs or the federation, what happens is that because they've been, I guess, approached by those, by the federation and professional clubs to work together and help them in different ways, they are willing to help also back by looking or scouting or calling somebody from the club or from the federation, say, look, I saw a player here, or we have a player here, we can send it to you. And that has helped a lot.
But could the state associations help with scouting and work better with the federation?
Yes, they can. They can, but you have to reach down to them, and then you have to have a specific plan of what you're looking for. That's one. And the second thing would be, what are they going to get help from? Okay? Because the associations, remember, the associations are, they have a lot of power because clubs are registered through them. Okay? So they should have their own programs, and they should be able to work with U.S. Soccer as long as U.S. Soccer backs them up and gives them an incentive so that way they can get help from them to reach more players, to be scouting more players.
In Europe, they say the best football is in Europe, but the best players come from the Americas. When players come to Spain from South America or Central America, they're viewed as assets. Do you think Latin American children or Hispanic American children are viewed as assets here in the U.S.?
Not as we should. And again, it all comes down to whoever is in charge, and it's always going to be like that. I still believe, and maybe I'm crazy, but I still believe that in our country, if we would have the right idea in what type of players we want to choose and which type of football we want to play and how we can break it down and develop it through our youth systems, through our youth national teams, to our professional league here, I think we would be competing very well internationally. And when I mean competing very well, I think people get confused here. There's one thing for us to have good results, okay? But then at the other end, those results have to come with a base of what we're doing with those results. You can have good results, but not even really playing or developing the type of players that we want. But you're getting the results, and sometimes that makes us blind, okay? Because when you get to the stage, and you know how it is, in the World Cup, you're always going to have between 8 or 10 national teams that are always in contention to win the World Cup. The rest of them, for certain reasons, they qualify, they compete, right? But when you look at the elite national teams, they have something in common. They have history. They have players that are technical, creative. They have, obviously, you know, their federations are well established. Most of those players are playing in top leagues and top teams in the world. So that tells you something. It's not only about the, again, I don't believe necessarily that results is the thing that measures how well you're doing. I think what measures how well you're doing is the type of football that we play. Are we proactive, or are we just a team that goes and competes and thinks, well, we'll do this if this happens? Or are we the type of country that says, well, you know, we can compete with this type of players, and we know that we're going to get results, even though our football is not going to be too attractive? All those things come into common. And when you're working in a federation, you have to think about all those things. Now, I would suggest, and sometimes think, well, you know, if you get a little country an African small country or a country in Central America that's small, where you don't have the volume of players that you can choose from, then obviously you still have to think what you're going to do. But when you're talking about America, where, you know, millions of kids are playing and thousands of Utah teams are in this country, I think we should be able to do a better job in really picking our players and teaching the football that we want them, so they can become elite players instead of just good players. And we can put them in some of the best teams in the world. And then now we're going to be able to compete against those 10 countries that are always, you know, favors to win World Cups.
Right. So you're talking about it's not just to win, but to play well, or even if you lose, you're playing well and you're thinking about the future. And
okay,
so really it's more of a mindset?
It's a mindset, but it's also, again, look, don't get me wrong. People say, well, when you look at the world the way football is, and you look at teams, you know, the best teams in the world, some of the best teams in the world have different styles that they play. But the difference is the type of coach that believes in a certain style of play. I think that's the difference. Because all those top teams, you're talking about Real Madrid, you're talking about Bayern Munich, you're talking about Barcelona, you know, Chelsea, Manchester City, all those teams have great players. But when you look at them, not all those teams play the same style, right? And part of it is because you have different type of coaches that believe in a different style, okay? So when I talk about the results, again, it all depends who is running the program and what type of football they want to play, okay? Our problem here in America is that we don't have the luxury yet to be able to have, for example, clubs in this country, professional clubs, where you say that 80% of the players playing in those professional clubs have a great foundation technically. And they can go from one team to another team or from one coach to another coach and still have that. We don't have that here. Most of our best players in this country, and in the MLS, if you look at the league, the best players are the foreigners.
Right.
The South American players, Argentinians, you know, Uruguayans, Toronto now, Giovinco, Italian. Those are the best players, whether we like it or not. Those are the best players. Why? They're technical, they're creative, they've been in top teams in the world for a reason. Now, we need to produce that more in our players here, okay? But again, that's not going to happen if we're only concentrating in getting results at whatever cost. No, the only way to do it is getting those results, but getting those results in a different style of football and picking those type of players that can help us to increase our competitiveness and not just getting results, but also playing with football, attractive football. I always say that, you know, football is kind of an art. Okay, you create, you do things, you go to the stadium, you know, I always talk about this story. When I was young, my first game that I went to see professional, I was 7 years old. And I went to see that, you know, and I fell in love with it at the stadium because I fell in love with the type of players that I saw playing there. Those players were technical, creative. They did things with the ball that it attracted me so much. I saw the people applauding and getting up because they play that type of football. And that's the football I grew up with. That's why, I mean, I respect all types of, you know, styles that people play and kids play, but I grew up with this essence of football. And when I read about, you know, how Johan Cruyff, when he was in Barcelona, what he thought, what he brought, Pep Guardiola in Barcelona, Bielsa, you know, in Spain, all those coaches had something in common, and they liked beautiful football. They liked technical players. They didn't look too much on the size or physical, but they love players that would entertain the fans at the stadiums. And that's how I am. And that's how I'm not saying that, you know, my thinking is better than everybody else. No. But living here in America for a lot of years and watching what we do, I think we need to change. We need to go in a different direction and try the other way, you know. I feel strongly about that. I think our players are capable of doing that.
I agree.
If you are enjoying this podcast, we invite you to subscribe. Visit our website at www.prospectsss.com. That's prospectsss.com. And follow us on Twitter at RethinkingF.
I want to circle back to something you were just, you touched on. You were talking about certain types of national coaches. And I'd like to know, in your opinion, what you think of as a good national coach or a good type of national coach and why.
I think our to be a national team coach, you have to have certain characteristics, right? One is you have to have a good understanding of the culture. Okay? You have to have good understanding of, in your mind, your conviction of what type of football you want to play. You have to have a good idea of the people you're going to hire, making sure that those people are in tune with you. You have to have a good plan to put when you are basically building a national team program or a national team, you know, team, depending on the age. You have to have, I would say, which is important, the knowledge to be able to pick the players that you think are going to help your national team. You have to have international experience.
One of the things we at Prospect Sports have noticed through our studies is that there aren't enough coaches with professional experience coaching. For example, in Spain, a great player like Guti or Roberto Carlos become youth coaches for Real Madrid and start coaching at a youth team and move up the ranks. The same thing happened with Zidane, Guardiola, Bielsa, Pochettino, and so on. And this happens in every club. The head coach for our international academy is a semi-retired pro player, a regional scout for Deportivo Coruña and other Liga teams. How important is it for academies and national teams to have coaches who have played professionally even at a young age?
I always think, and this is something that people might not agree, but being a professional player doesn't necessarily make you a great coach. But it does give you the advantage because you played at that level. You understand the players at that level. You went through different difficulties at that level. Okay? So you're more experienced in that sense when you become a coach. But then the other factor comes in where how prepared you are and how well you understand the job that you're going to be doing as a coach. Okay? So those things, I think, are necessary. Okay? And the other thing is, you need to also, as a coach, when you come in and you get into a program, do you want to be the same as everybody's been for years and years? Or do you think you can change something different according to the knowledge you have and the understanding you have of how you want to proceed with a program and how you want to change it from the years previous, okay? Because if you bring somebody or you become somebody that coaches in the national team and you want to follow the people that were here, then you're going to do the same thing. I think the important thing is about learning what others did, the right thing or the wrong thing, and then improving that, okay? But at the end, also, I think that wherever you grew as a player, however you thought you were a player, the type of players you were, I think it comes down to that. If you were a technical player, you're always going to like players that are technical, players that are creative. It doesn't mean that you're not going to bring players that can defend and all that, no. But it does mean that you like more attractive football, that you like a football that could be different than what you've seen in years and years here. So I think that's, those are things that I think a coach that comes to that level should have or think about.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you name someone that you would consider to be a good type of national coach?
You mean from it? For our program here?
Yes.
Look, from what I've seen so far in our programs here, I believe that we need to have somebody with the capacity of having all those traits that I just mentioned. And right now, I think we have some coaches here, young coaches, that could benefit from somebody with all those capacities. I personally think that Marcelo Bielsa would be a good fit for our country. And the reason I say that is because history shows us, and obviously what he's done through the years with different programs, in the national team, in clubs. And Bielsa has all those traits that I just mentioned. And apart from that, I think he's a good teacher of the game. And if he would come here, I think that all of us, and especially the young coaches now in the MLS, would learn so much about him that he would leave a big legacy for years to come. And our coaches would benefit a lot from him, because I've studied him a lot over the years. And apart from being a good coach, he's a good teacher. He's an honest man. He's very passionate about, which I think is what we need here also. He grooms well the young players. I always give an example. You know, those Chilean players that are playing in top teams in the world, they were under him before they became big, and he helped them a lot to become and to be where they're at. Vidal and Medel, Sanchez, all those players were under him at that time. They were young. And every player that you speak to and you ask him about how Bielsa works, they're always going to tell you they've learned so much about football with him, on the tactical basis, and, you know, technical basis, the way he works. I have, you know, a lot of work from him that I see how he works with his players. I just don't see it here right now. I have not seen it, to be honest with you, with anybody here in our country. So he would be, for me, he would be the perfect fit, especially with us now that we didn't qualify. We need a new vision. We need somebody with different ideas. And our players, I can tell you, our players would benefit so much with him. They would learn so much with him that it's huge. It's huge. So he would be the only one that I think right now that can help us. Now, you know, I would like to have Guardiola come here. You know, there's other ones, but Bielsa is the one that I think fits better because of the way our program is right now. And remember, our generation of players that played in the World Cup for the last three cycles, they're phasing out now. We're getting new kids now, and those are the ones that they need to be groomed correctly, and they need to be taught correctly by somebody with the abilities of Bielsa.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about grooming players and helping to advance their level. One of the beliefs that we subscribe to is that for a talented player to move to a higher level, that they must train in an immersive environment. And that philosophy is supported by research. And by immersive environment, I mean, you know, where you take a player and you put them in a more advanced development system, and they play with local players who have a much higher level. And this can happen anywhere. You know, it can happen in the U.S., Germany, Spain, wherever. But I guess what I'd like to ask you is, what do you see as the advantages for our U.S. youth players who are playing in an immersive environment in other countries? Like, do you think that they have a greater chance of success, or that they're on a better path toward professionalism? And if so, why?
Well, there's two ways of looking at it. I'll give you the first one here in America. Our league doesn't have a relegation system here. The MLS doesn't have that. So whether you finish in last place or you win the, you know, the league, the teams are not going anywhere. Okay? Mm. So for example, if I am part of a staff that works with an MLS academy, for example, what is my goal? Okay? One would be, I need to find talented players that I can groom and see if I can make sure that when they turn 17 or 18, they can be playing in the first team. That should be my priority at an academy level. Now, at the same time, I want to make sure that my head coach, as an owner, believes in those type of players, believes in young players. Because if they don't believe in them, you might have an academy program here in the U.S. that's, you know, taking 80 players and trying to groom them, but if they don't get the chance to play, you will never see them. Okay, so you have to have that head coach from the first team in tune with the academies and not be afraid to bring a young kid. Now, not all the talented players make it at 17 or 18. Some develop more, some develop less. But my point is that if you have a path before they get to the first team, and you have the right people who's obviously teaching those kids, there's still room for those kids to come at 17 and 18 and play with the first team, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, you test them. But you keep them involved with them because that's how they're going to develop. They won't develop at their same age all the time. Okay? Now, we go to Europe. Europe is different. It's already an advantage them being over there in an academy program. Okay? Because again, we discussed this before. The environment is different. The competition is different. Okay? The games are different. Okay? You know, all those clubs playing, you know, leagues that have promotion and relegation. So all those things are a little bit different than here. And again, the advantage of our youth players playing over there and competing at that level, yeah, it's whether we like it or not, it is better than here. But still, I think here we can do a better job in giving opportunities to our young players more than what we usually do. And I'll give you an example. I think there was an article some weeks ago where they asked Pulisic about his, obviously, experience in Europe. And one of the things he brought up was, you know, I feel sorry for some of my ex-national team players because they don't get a chance to play.
Right.
Now, he said that because, obviously, in Germany, one of the things that I like about Germany is because Germany gives opportunity to young players. With the first team, and I mean, Pulisic is a 98, you know, he'll be 20 this year, but when he got there, he was young, and at 70, he was playing, you know, Champions League games. Now, we have players that are creative enough, like Pulisic in this country, that are in academy programs, but they're not getting the chance, because obviously, the coaches still don't believe that it is important for those players to come to the first team because they want to get results. Okay?
Right.
And again, I agree that you need to get results, but what is the meaning of those results? you have academies spending $2 million a year, and you don't see too many youth academy players that have been signed to professional contracts starting. And I mean, they need to think about that, especially when there's no relegation promotion. You don't have nothing to lose. You can put a young guy, two young kids with, you know, eight senior guys, foreign guys. I'm sure that if you give them time and they're talented enough, they can play. But again, it comes down to the head coach. Does he want that, or does he just feel he needs to win, or because he's going to get fired? And I always say this, you're going to get fired anyway. Okay, sooner or later, you're going to get fired. But when you have a academy spending that much money, you need to concentrate a lot in developing those players, because at the end, they either can play for you or you can sell them to Europe. Okay, and that's the way it is. That's the way every club in the world does it.
That's right. And it seems to me that one of the biggest issues in the U.S. is that there's not a real bridge for kids who graduate out of the academy system to move into a more direct path to professionalism. I know some kids will play, in the college, excuse me, on the college level. But it's different here than it is, for example, in Spain, where there really is a path to professionalism from the academy level. They, for example, they spend an additional year or can stay an additional year in the academy system there. And before, when you and I spoke, you made an interesting comment about how the best youth players in the U.S. need to go to Europe to train and develop. And I think that, at least from my perspective, the bridge that does not exist here in the U.S. but does in other countries is an important factor for those best youth players in the U.S. So can you talk a little bit more about why you think that players who are at that level should go and play in Europe?
Okay, because... you know, here in our country, I think I mentioned it to you, but more than 90% of our kids are going to go to college. And that's the way it is set here. College soccer is a sport. But when you look at it, in reality, it's a sport for those kids to compete. But basically what they're doing is they're going to college for 4 years and they're going to get a degree. Because college football is difficult. It's a difficult thing to do for a player who wants to be a pro, because there's so many rules. You don't play a lot. You only play about 3.5 months out of the year. You compete at a high level at 3.5 months. Then 8 months, you don't do much. You don't compete. So it's hard to develop a player. Then you have the rules that tell you that you cannot train with players because the NCAA doesn't permit that. So now you say, okay, the families and players that have potential to be professionals have to make a choice. Do I stay here, go to college, get a scholarship, get a degree, or do I really want to pursue my dream in playing football at a higher level, but then that means I'm going to have to sacrifice and leave my country? Okay? So that's a difficult thing. Because it comes down to what the families have to decide. But if you go there, if you decide to go, all right, the path over there in Europe, I think, whether we like it or not, it's a great thing for our kids. But you know, it's difficult also. Because it's so different than what we do here in America. But once you make it, once you establish yourself, then you're ahead of the game from the kids that are here. There's no question about that. But again, can we improve it here? Because my question is always, why is Uruguay one of the top countries that sells players to the world? This is a small country, okay? And some of the players that they have playing top teams in the world, why is that? Okay? Obviously, number one is probably Brazil, number two is probably Argentina, that exports more players to the world, okay? And those countries, obviously, except for maybe Argentina or Brazil, when you talk about Uruguay, it's probably the size of New Jersey. So there's something that they're doing well in their culture, but that's football culture also. Okay? I still think here we can do better. Honestly, we can do better, but we need to have the people that are thinking of doing that for our players, because then we will become a country that exports players. And the more you do that, the better national teams you have, because now your let's say American players are playing in top teams. I mean, it's an advantage right now with some of the kids that we have right now that are playing in Europe when they come back, the young ones, the 98 groups, 99 groups that are playing in Europe now. In 2-3 years, they're going to be good if somebody gets them, if we get the right coach to work with them, because they are talented, they are in Europe now, they're competing, which has a big advantage in anybody who stays here.
That's right, right. And hopefully the future technical director and coaching staff for the USMNT will start to notice some of these American players who are playing overseas and who can bring a lot of talent and a lot of energy to the team. Hugo, thank you so much for joining us on Rethinking Football. It's been great to get to know you and to learn from you. Please join us for the next episode of Rethinking Football as we continue our conversations about how the world of football can change.
To access the transcript of this podcast and other archives, please visit our website, www.prospectsss.com, and click on Podcasts. That is prospectsss.com. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe to get the latest episode directly to your device. This episode is brought to you by PSS International Academy. Research shows that in sports, the one thing that works and makes lower-performing players better is immersion. To learn about our programs and how you can play federated football in Spain, visit prospectsss.com and click on International Academies. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at RethinkingF. Rethinking Football's theme song, Actionable, is courtesy of bensound.com.